Should we start with a minute silence for Columbo?
No. And that's the intro.
Would you fucking believe it? It's Lug Radio, Season 6, Episode 1.
Yay!
My name is Adam Sweet.
I'm Chris Proctor.
I'm Stuart Langridge.
I'm John O'Bacon.
And I'm Abe Bradshaw.
Yes, yeah. Returning!
Hurrah!
It's nice to have you in the room, actually. Unlike the other two bastards.
Oh, yeah.
Lavelle and Sparks were invited, and they didn't come.
Well, when you say they were invited, I mean, I was kind of invited, right?
You liar! You were invited.
You were fully invited.
I just didn't get
all the emails that everybody else got.
Oh, you didn't have enough time for the tremendous preparation that you usually do for an episode.
That's a fair point.
I believe you have been owned.
This week on the show,
we have a segment called The Devil's Drink, which we'll find out about later, and yes, Adam will specifically.
Yes, you will. He won't find out quite as much as I did. Yes,
you will. We're also going to be talking about the recent news regarding LibreOffice, OpenOffice, and the Oracle Love Triangle.
And we're also going to be again discussing the Linux virus situation. Is it a threat or is it not?
And Jono will put the boot into Identica.
Oh!
That is an unfair characterisation. All right, let's get this show on the road.
Sounds like a fun-packed show.
In the world of social networking, everybody knows about Twitter. And a lot of people in the free software world know about Identica. For those of you who don't know what it is, it's basically a free software version of Twitter. On Identica, there is, I think it's safe to say, there is a certain demographic of users. Those users are free software users. And there has been some critique at times, Mr. Langridge. I can turn the shitty stick back around to you.
It's not just me.
No, it's both of you, isn't it?
There has been some critique that Identica is sometimes a little bit tunnel visioned in perspectives, you know. So many of us will post to both Twitter and Identica at the same time because we want to, you know, appeal to both groups. And consequently, you sometimes get, you know, reasonable responses on Twitter and a total booting on Identica.
Do we all have both accounts, by the way? Just a little...
Little poll?
Yeah.
What about you, Sweet?
No.
No? Do you have a computer?
Yes. I do now.
Can't connect to Identica from an abacus.
Well, I refuse to do that speak and spell thing.
Shut your fucking mouth, right? I only signed up to Twitter about 2 months ago. I've avoided it for that long.
Welcome to the internet.
I thought it was Web 2.0 bollocks and would never take off.
Do you remember?
Which, right, incidentally, which is exactly what these two thought when I was using Twitter, and they were ripping the piss out of me for it.
I absolutely agree. Yeah. So I have sympathy for Adam's point of view.
I don't have an Identica account.
But you've got a Twitter account.
Yeah.
How many followers have you got, by the way? After 2 months, given the fact that you're the famous Adam.
How many followers have you got who aren't in this room?
It's about 30 or so, I think.
Oh, maybe. Is that
Ashton Kutcher?
Because I'm guessing that most of us have got both. Yeah. And I just wanted to know, which is your primary? So for me, I mean, it started off with Twitter was definitely my primary.
Right.
And these days, it's absolutely switched over. I very rarely ever post to Twitter these days. The first one I fire up is Identica.
And why is that?
I've even put on my Twitter that I don't use this anymore. And I was the first person to sign up for Twitter.
Not
the first person in the world, amongst us, obviously.
Is there a reason why you've switched it that way?
Just because there's more open source people on there, and it has things like groups, and you know, you can do exclamation marks as well as hashtags and things like that. And so there's a higher percentage of open source people on Identica, obviously.
So you've chosen that mainly because of the audience?
It wasn't really a conscious choice. I just found myself using Identica way more often.
Right.
Yeah. So which is your primary?
My absolute primary is Twitter. Yeah. I used to post to both and read both, and these days I post to and read Twitter, and I don't use Identica at all. I wrote a blog post about this a year or so ago, a couple of years ago, something like that. Exactly because, yes, the audience on Identica is open source, but most of the stuff I talk about on Twitter has nothing to do with hacking. It's what I did that day. Where I'm going this evening, what I'm thinking about in general. I'm not interested in spending...
the pub a lot of the time, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. The horrible, horrible, horrible music in pubs in Stourbridge. Yeah, so my problem was that I spent a bunch of time posting to both, and I got interesting conversations on Twitter and on Identica. People want to talk about free software and nothing but free software.
Okay. And Johnny, I guess yours is, your primary is Twitter.
I'm both equally.
Do you have it where, like, both questions to everyone? Like, do you have it where you post to one and it copies it to the other one?
No, mine. No? I post using Gwibber, so it okay. goes to Twitter and Identica equally, and I read both of them equally. Mm. But then I have my Twitter feed is aggregated to Facebook as well. So if I post, it goes to the three of them. And for me, I am
still a whore, then, eh, Bacon?
Pretty much, what yeah. About,
social Christopher? Media whore. Let's be clear.
So which do you have? And which is your primary?
I've mainly post to Identity and it forwards to Twitter. I very, very okay. rarely yeah, yeah, yeah. post to Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless I've forgotten, basically. Forgotten that I'm sending to Identity.
Okay, yeah. So that's...
But essentially because, yeah, they're a lot more free software people on Identity. And they, you know, the people I'm, you know, my friends, tend to be free software people. So they tend to be on Identity. Whereas on Twitter, the people I follow are people who I don't know, but who post interesting stuff anyway.
Yeah, that's the same for me, actually. Yeah.
I suppose my thing is not just... I mean, yeah, a lot of my friends are free software people, but I like talking to them about things that aren't free software.
And yeah, but I don't see...
You aren't allowed to do that on
yeah. Yeah, but it doesn't seem to happen.
Yeah, but the other thing is...
Get honest, new friends.
Okay, bye, you lot.
I like talking to people whose worldview is not, you have to use free software and nothing else.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of times... And I don't know whether this is a fault... Part of the reason why I was interested in talking about this is whether... This is something to do with Identica, whether it's something to do with the choices that the people in Identica make, or whether it's something to do with me.
By the way,
what
did you just agree that to that statement?
Which statement?
The one about you people who use software other than free software.
Yes.
Okay. Because you used to be a staunch advocate.
I have changed my opinion quite a lot in the last
few
years.
And the thing is, the amount of times I've posted something on, you know, again to Twitter and Identica, and it's just been, it's not been anything particularly controversial. It's just been, I've made, like, I'll mention Skype, or I'll mention something else that's non-free, or I'll just mention anything, and somebody will, oh, what about copyright assignment? You know? And I don't know whether that's me, because I'm the Ubuntu community manager, or whether that's because, really?
I mean, that's the thing I was bringing up when I wrote the blog post.
Well, so if you put the word Skype in something, somebody replies to you saying, what about copyright assignment?
There has been countless situations where a relatively innocent tweet has resulted in a ranty thread on Identica.
That's
and there's always the same people on it. I'm obviously not going to say who those people are.
Mm-hmm. Who are they?
No, but I mean, I love Fab, and Brad Kuhn is usually in there, and there's a bunch of other people. And, you know, respect to these people because they believe in free software, and that's where their heart is.
Basically, that's not an Identica's problem.
That's a
problem you have with them as people, possibly, or the way they post.
Specifically.
So, and if there was only ever Twitter,
but what
then
I've
you'd
noticed,
have the same problem with Twitter.
But the reason why I've noticed it is because whenever that happens, it's always on Identica. And it's not just those people. I mean, those people participate in it. I mean, Bradley Kuhn and I will talk elsewhere. We've talked over email and things like that. And I have total respect for Fab and Brad and these other guys. But
and are you saying he's different when he's not Identica, or he still has the same views?
No, I'm just saying that it turns into... It's a conversation... Often it'll start out with just a couple of people, and then it turns... And then it just gets dogpiled by people.
That's the point. It's not just that you get dogpiled on Identica. That's not necessarily the problem. It's the example I gave in the blog post I wrote. I picked one day in my life and named the things I tweeted about. And my dad had been to a garden party and met the Queen. And which I thought was quite cool, you know. And
why is that cool, by the way?
My dad met the Queen.
Okay.
The royalist segment over that.
Bloody Republican. Shut up.
Ignore the fact that she's a bitch.
Not the point.
Not a royalist. Simple conversation.
Yeah. I mentioned a few other things, like I was playing with Double Twist on Android, and
what is this?
Mentioned a couple of problems I had.
Some kind of euphemism.
No, it's a music syncing thing.
Okay.
Mentioned a bunch of other stuff, and people on Twitter responded to those things. I had normal conversations. And then sometimes you might get battered about free software or whatever. On Identica, no one responded to any of the normal stuff at all. There was no ordinary discussion. Either, you know, I wouldn't have minded people saying, oh, what do you want to go and see the Queen for? Be a Republican, that's fine. That'd be an interesting discussion. None of that happened. I got jumped on about free software and that was it. So that makes me think, okay, I can't have ordinary conversations. All I can do on Identica is get shouted at. So what the fuck's the point?
which is why I don't use it.
But you're not going to leave the open source world, are you? Because that happens a lot in the open source world. You get shouted at and you get these zealots.
But what I do is...
You used to be fairly zealoty yourself.
Indeed, yes. and this is... The post that I wrote was exactly about this, because I was being shouted at for not being as fervent a supporter of free software as I was. And the point I was trying to make was that I believe in it just as much. I just don't shout about it as much.
And what I
was annoyed about was that I was being perceived as being less supporting of free software simply because I'm less annoying about it to other people. As if the fervency of my belief is defined by how many people I bollock rather than what I actually do.
Yeah.
That was the source of my annoyance about Identica.
The thing that worries me a little bit as well...
But that's moving on to the free software zealotry generally rather than Identica question.
The thing that worries me a little bit about this is that, you know... I've been using Identica for a few years now, and the thing that worries me more and more is that as time goes on, I'm noticing more and more people, not just in the Ubuntu community but elsewhere, who will say, oh, that's typical Identica. Like, it's as if the reputation has started brewing about it, that it's just full of people who have that very, very hardened perspective about free software.
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. Some people are like it, therefore everyone says they like it, therefore people who think like that go to Identica more, and other people are forced away. Yeah.
And a lot of people have ditched it. I know a lot of people who've ditched it because they don't want to...
lots of people have ditched Twitter.
Yeah, but the reason why these people have ditched Twitter is because of the philosophical reasons.
No one ditches
Twitter for any other reason than the fact that they don't like either the company Twitter or the fact that it's closed.
For me, it became really commercial, and it's just always businesses and always stars and all.
Yeah, but you choose to read them. I mean, just don't read those, follow those people.
That's the other question I was going to ask is, do you restrict who follows you, or do you just let anybody follow you?
Anyone.
Just let anybody follow me.
So I'm just, because I'm quite restrictive about who I let follow me.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe there's an element of that.
You see, to me... That kind of defeats the point. If I want to I barely use Facebook.
Okay, so on Facebook, do you have everybody friendly? Anyone who sends you a friend request, you just accept it, or do you just let your friends in?
I'm pretty liberal. If I know them,
you're a community manager, if I've
spoken to them online, then if I know them and I recognise their name, I'll be friends with them. I don't accept strangers, but Facebook is really part of my job, so it's not really as personal as it could be.
That's your job. You have to blog and go on Facebook, and that's what you do for a living.
Yeah. And that's your job. Shit doesn't sink, so...
However...
Actually, that's unfair. It does sink now.
Thank you. There it is. So I've done my job, you see.
So the only thing that worries me a little bit is that... there's a guy called John Phillips who... I don't know if he still does work for status.net, but he did work there as a community manager. I sat down with him one night, and I said to him, like... I'm worried that Identica is kind of being painted as this place that's a bit extremist. So, you know, if you do post something, people dogpile you. And he'd seen some of this stuff, and I said to him, like, is this something you can solve? He said, well, it's not really something we can police, obviously. It's not something that status.net...
Is that what you wanted, by the way?
No. Right. But what I want to know is how we can solve the problem. Because it worries me that... I think it's great to... It'd be like going to a lug and being kicked out of the lug because you use Skype. Not being welcome.
But you don't necessarily... There's no problem with having a Twitter for free software discussions, and that being Identica. It just means that people on Identica should stop saying this is an alternative to Twitter, and say it's an alternative to Twitter for people who want to talk primarily and solely about free software
stuff. But
that's
not its business case.
Their argument is it's for everybody, but it's not for everybody. If you go there and want to talk about your dad seeing the Queen, nobody listens.
If it was run by,
it just needs more people. It just needs... Except at the moment, the people that are on there are just open source people, so it just needs more normal people to join it.
Maybe that's the solution.
What's the motive for normal people to go there?
Well, exactly. What's the motive for normal people to stop using Windows and use Linux, you know?
It's been colonised by a demographic who only care about free software, because otherwise they'd just be using Twitter.
If you didn't care about free software, you'd just use Twitter. Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
And the thing is,
though, you're being a bit oversensitive about this. Is this not like kind of how shit works? And, you know, big argument happens. You say something, somebody says, oh, that's bollocks, because... And they don't really mean it as an insult. They don't mean it as kind of like all your opinions are worthless. It's just kind of the next move in an argument, and then you're expected to argue back and say, no, well, you're worthless. The argument is the fun. Is it,
in my experience, it's worse on Identica than it is on mailing
lists. But I think certainly...
And worse on Identica than it is on forums.
Some of the people who you... I, having seen your arguments with one or two people on Identica, I think some of them just argue purely for the comedy value of having the argument.
Right.
And you know, if you argued back, that you would they would have a lot of respect for that, and that would be fine. You know, well, even if you beat them in the argument,
I think
they'd
that's
be happy
the other thing
that,
as well,
you know?
Is that like maybe the way I'm looking at it, where Identica is part of my job, so I look at it in a different way in terms of the discussions there are often they relate to, you know, the work that I do, and if somebody's using it as a hobby where debating online and arguing online is a bit of fun. Maybe that's two different lenses in which people view Identica. Maybe that's the reason why I see it a little bit different. I think the other thing is that if it was run by the Free Software Foundation, I'd have no issue whatsoever, because you expect free software people, and if you go on there and you expect and you're not 100% free software person, and you know, then you shouldn't expect that kind of leeway. But like, as Zach says, it's kind of like a replacement for
Twitter.
So
you'd be happy getting a bulletin if it was from the Free Software Foundation, yeah, but not if it's from real people.
I'd see no reason for me to complain, because that's the culture of the Free Software Foundation.
This next segment is called The Devil's Drink, although John is insisting we call it Ye Olde Lump and Filthy Potato Water of the Devil. But that's not what it's called. It's called The Devil's Drink.
Oh, yes, it is.
Right? And it's a quiz show. It's a quiz game. Woo-hoo. But with a slightly Lug Radio twist, in that this is the only segment we've ever had where we've had to pre-prepare a bucket in the middle of the room.
There really is a bucket here. Yeah.
Okay, so the idea is we've all written questions and we've put them in a hat, which Jono has. I'll shuffle the hat. Yes, that's Jono's baseball cap, which he wears to look like Fred Durst. And the idea is you will draw out a question, and if you get the question right, you will nominate someone else. If you get the question wrong, you stay in the hot seat. The person in the hot seat has to drink the lump and filthy potato water of the devil.
You need to explain
that
to
me. And the ingredients in ye olde lump and filthy potato water of the devil are, Adam Sweet.
In one, we have fiery chili twisted ketchup. We need the fucking bullseye dude to do this. In two, we have Liam Perrin's Worcestershire sauce.
In three,
we have Marmite.
Banjo Denmark.
In four,
we have Tabasco sauce.
In five,
my favourite and yours, it's salmon paste.
In six,
and just to make it slightly reasonable, Theakston's Old Peculiar.
Which is a bear.
Which is a bear.
Now, it should be clear that even though we said in and then different numbers, they're all actually in the same glass. So I have this delicious-looking glass of black evil with an iceberg of salmon paste floating in the top of it. Adam was very nearly sick just at the look of his drink earlier.
Yeah, fucking
so
disgusting.
This can't possibly go well.
Of course, by glass, you actually mean child's plastic cup, yes?
I do suspect it's dissolving its way through the bottom of the cup as we speak. It's just horrible.
Can we get this out of the way?
So to explain the rules, the way it works is you get asked a question. If you get the question correct, then you volunteer someone else to sit in the hot seat and they have to drink.
They drink the lump and filth.
If you get the question wrong, then you have to drink the lump and filth, and then you stay in the hot seat and get another question. The twist, and the thing which takes it from a copy of UUPC's quiz show into our own thing, is whether you got the question right or not is decided by everyone else voting.
Who are all on their honour?
Yes, yeah. They're all on their honour.
These people would never lie, would they?
No, absolutely not. And I'm ashamed of a little bit hurt that you'd even suggest it.
You've got to reasonably vote that the question was answered correctly.
Yes.
Okay.
So
okay.
When it comes down to it, right, I can't imagine for a second if it's a 50-50 to regards to being right or wrong.
Because there are four people voting, yeah, you're
yes.
right.
Yeah.
I can't imagine a little tickle of mischief in the back of somebody's mind. So
that would never happen on
the
radio.
Make him drink it.
The person who is going... So Tony... is going to break ties. Typical Saturday night for Tony. Alright, so we voted all that ACK is going to go first.
RHCs, don't plus nominate RHCs, right?
Fuck all of you, just to be clear.
Alright,
right.
All red hat together here.
Right, okay. So I have a question. I hope I'm...
It begins.
Genuinely properly worried about this. Right, okay, my question. Who is the author of Pitivy?
to confirm that's the question.
Yes, that is the video tool.
Who is the author of Pettery, which I assume is the video tool? And my answer is Edward Hervey.
Okay. Okay. Now let's vote.
Let's vote. Did I get it right?
You've got that right. So up for me.
Oh. Yep. Yeah. Okay. I got that amazing right. Dr.
Hooray!
Zoidberg
so I now
impression.
Need to nominate someone to drink and then have the next question. I nominate Adam Slade.
I'm sure you've got an extra large floaty piece of cake as well.
It's massive. I've got a massive floating thing of salmon.
You're going to fucking pay for this.
Drink.
And as a second point, I want to remind you, I'm sitting on your bed.
Right, so first of all, you have to drink.
No, have I got to drink mine or have I got to drink yours?
No, he has to drink. No.
You have to drink yours.
I thought you only drank if you got the question wrong.
No, because I nominated him. That's the point.
Okay, yeah. Right.
I nominate. Then if he gets the next question wrong,
he has to drink some more.
Then he has to drink some more. Yeah. But he'll probably get it right. I mean, I got a question
so
about
it's
pity,
inherently.
Right?
Yeah, he gets it right.
Right, so you have to drink, first of all.
I ought to say, right, not only am I horribly afraid, right, I think my chances of getting a second question right after this, drinking this, are pretty fucking slim. And I think I'm going to be sick as well.
Right, okay, well,
we've moved the bucket closer
to Adam.
Right.
Gary, one.
Smell that just before I go.
Oh, that'll help, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
smells delicious.
Just before we go.
it smells like mine.
Forgive me.
It's actually quite nice.
Yeah, you'll forgive me for stalling. I'm retching at the thought
Adam,
of salmon
just do
paste.
It.
Just
so
do it.
I've got extra Tabasco. This is going to be fucking good. Has anyone ever seen the episode of Bottom when they have the gas man come round?
Yeah.
They make him drink cold tea. Right.
Well, you might want to pick up the bin if you really think you're going to vomit.
Right.
It's going to be a hearty swig, apparently.
We're looking for a good hearty swig. If you're going to spew
into
this
bin.
You've got to knock at least half of it,
I'd say.
And don't worry about the ice cube.
You're in front of the lump, Sam.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen.
This is far worse than the finger of God.
Oh, he was close though, and he bottled it.
just a look on his face there. That is that.
You're a different color than you were before, Adam.
There's no way.
That was not that.
That was half a mouthful.
Come on,
two mouthfuls.
I don't know that. City was first.
Was all right,
let's be fair. Let's be fair. Adam drinks some water. Right, Adam, pick a question.
What? There is no way I'm not that bad.
Yeah, do you want some chocolate?
Do you want some chocolate?
Sponsored by Cadbury for this episode. Well, not really.
I'm going to be shitting fire for a week.
What were we going to do? You can't make a question.
That is proper rough, that.
Eat some chocolate first, maybe.
Okay.
I can't
read out your question.
What is the current version of Fedora?
If only I'd got that one.
And I'd say 15.
Okay. So
we're going to go around and vote.
Are we talking current stable version or just
stable? I imagine.
What decide?
Oh, no, that wasn't what I was asking.
Right. I'm going to go no on that.
Right, no, that's a no. That's a no.
That's nose all around.
That's four nose around the table.
My lips are on fire.
You might as well throw it in the vomit bin.
So what is the current version?
It's rawhide, you know, it's always current.
Hold on. Go on, drink up. Adam, how can that clarify?
How can that specify?
Dude, the
judges have spoken.
Right, remember earlier when I said a little tinkle of mischief. See, I avoided the fucking salmon last time.
Let's drink again.
By the way,
Adam drinks again.
Given this is your second turn, we're not going to be quite so forgiving in how much you drink. Knock it.
It is easy for you to say you haven't had any yet.
You killed off enough taste buds to her.
Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, Adam takes drink number two. He's gone almost white at the prospect of it.
Second most memorable.
Fuck off.
Okay, this time. Here we go. Second drink.
It's almost all gone.
That didn't hurt as much.
Oh, really?
It's all right the second time.
Ah, okay.
And I still haven't.
Finish it off then.
Okay. Right, Adam remains in the hot seat because he got it wrong. Ask another question.
This is a fucking fix, isn't it? Well,
next question. Hey, no cheating, you bastard. Trying to draw your own question out, we'll have none of that.
Doesn't matter which question he draws, it's the judge's decision is final.
True, this is true. Okay.
On the plus side, you can't taste the Marmog.
Okay, the next question.
Oh, bollocks. This has got to be... Which grep switch gives the number of lines that match?
Okay.
You have to have a grep switch question.
Oh, my fucking lips are burning. I'm not going out tonight now. I'm only like the fucking nutty professor when he starts getting fat again. I have no idea.
Oh, dear.
I think that's the incorrect answer.
But I'll make a guess at C.
A 1 in 26 chance.
It is actually right. Oh, it is minus 2.
I'm going to go with no.
I'm going to go with no.
But it's right.
Yes. It's right.
It's right.
Well, maybe.
Don't be an arsehole. I think two mouthfuls is enough, to be honest. Of whatever it's lump and arsehole or whatever it's called.
Bearing in mind that you're supposed to be a sysadmin, I think you should have had that right off the top of your head. And the hesitation was just not good enough. It's a big thumbs down from me.
Yeah!
Oh! The third one will be easy.
It's harsh, but them's the rules. Okay. Right. Adam, take it.
Hold on. I got it right. You're a bunch of arse. Oh, and that means it's me again.
Pick a question.
Adam, take a drink.
Yeah, have a drink. Do you want some chocolate?
It's going to be easier the third time.
You say it was nicer the second time, then.
So bad.
Is swirling it really going to help?
Burn my lips. Are
just
mix
the salmon in.
There's not that much left. Not
the
rest of
that salmon out.
You've got to eat the salmon.
What, top it up from someone else's.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's all right. <isn't it?
laughs> I was trying to be helpful.
Right, fuck this. Oh, I've got to get the salmon away.
Be careful with the bit.
That's a bit of vertebra there.
Oh, well done, sir. Yes. Look at that. That was champion.
I would eat all of that chocolate there, that entire kilogram.
No. I can't do the salmon.
Okay.
Pick a question.
I'd have piped it into a word count, but personally.
So would I.
I'd have, yeah.
That would have, yeah, that would have been good.
Okay.
Fair point, I hadn't thought that.
Next question.
Are you joking?
What?
That's got to be yours or yours. Which products are in the fridge in the London Canonical office?
Oh, milk.
That's the pity question. That's it.
Milk.
I know the answer to the pity question. Right. I hate to be an arsehole, but I refuse to answer this question.
It's a question.
There's bound to be milk in there. Come
on. Is this popular knowledge, do you think, in the open source world? Yeah. Right. Well, no. Sorry, I ain't drinking no more. And I ain't answering that either.
Oh, no. I think we've had a fair game, Adam.
So you're stepping out?
How the fuck am I supposed to know the answer to that?
Come on!
Oh, fuck you, man. I am shrunk three mouthfuls of that evil, putrid shit, and nobody else has done football, so I'm calling it Tom.
So I guess we'll wrap it up there, then.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Adam.
Oh, yeah, pleasure.
So glad you came today. Mine is
next. Somebody else have a go. Otherwise, you might be inclined to say this looks a lot like a fix.
No.
Adam, if you get it right, then you get to nominate, yeah? So surely if you refuse to answer it, I think you'd get to nominate Jono as well.
It doesn't work like that.
There's one question left.
Well, I'm not answering it.
Well, all right. Should we all drink a very small amount in solidarity? That seems fair.
You make up a
filth. Just not the first time you said that.
There is actually one question left. I think we should get someone to ask it. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Not without knocking my mic down.
Adam, here's to you, mate.
Here's to you.
Here's to Adam. Well played. Jesus Christ. Oh, water.
Holy crap.
Oh, my God.
It was your idea.
Oh. Oh, that's no. Repugnant. Oh my god.
Oh, all right. Now, maybe you'll forgive me for refusing to answer a question I couldn't possibly know.
It's quite salty, isn't it?
And
right, so the Premier Office Suite in the open source world is obviously OpenOffice, which was owned by Sun up until a year or so ago when Sun got bought out by Oracle. Now, recently, there's obviously been quite a large split where a lot of the developers have gone off and formed LibreOffice, and I think a lot of the distributions are starting to package that and play with that. And Oracle have then basically gone, we don't really care about this anymore, and given the source code over to Apache as an incubator project. I think that's a reasonably fair, brief summary of what's going on. Right,
sounds good.
Phew. so basically, the question is, I mean, how is this whole controversy going to affect us? You know, we need an office suite. How is this going to affect us? You know, is the fork a bad thing? Is it?
I think it potentially could have a bad effect because a lot of people know the name OpenOffice, and so they may well, you know, go to the OpenOffice website and see that, you know, nothing's happened. You know, it basically looks like it's, you know, ceased development, and nobody really knows LibreOffice at the moment, so they really need to do a little bit of marketing there, I guess. Yeah. I've never heard myself say that phrase. but yeah, so I think it really could have a detrimental effect.
I have to admit, I tried to install OpenOffice the other day, because I needed it for something, and I got very confused trying to find out where the hell it was just in the yum list output, until I realised it was LOffice.
I think there's a big distinction between it being an open source office suite available to open source desktop users, Linux users, and it being an open source Office suite available to Windows users and Mac users, for example.
Yeah.
And yeah, if the OpenOffice project stagnates and LibreOffice continues, then people who are using it on Windows may well go to the OpenOffice site and think, oh, look, nothing has changed, it must be bollocks. But presumably people in distributions won't.
Well, no, I guess if you're doing what I did, which was install it on Fedora, whatever.
What does Fedora ship right now? Does it ship?
Libre.
It ships Libre. Libre. Ubuntu ships Libre as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know what OpenSUSE ships.
They still going?
Ooh!
Harsh.
Controversial.
Good point, well argued.
Good question.
It's a good question because no one knows the answer, which is in itself disturbing.
Yes, they are. They are going.
So you had to search for LOffice.
Yeah, I think I ended up finding, I think it was LOffice or LibreOffice or something. It wasn't OpenOffice. It wasn't packaged as OpenOffice, which caused me, to say.
Is it, is it not installed by default?
Not on my install.
No?
I mean, I didn't think I'd need it. I've had that install for months, and I've not actually needed it until now, so wasn't installed. So.
I think the thing is...
But is that the point now? I mean, it's one thing on the open source desktop. I mean, surely we need the rest of the world to know about it as well. So,
well, that was exactly the point. That what do we do about the idea of getting open source onto people's desktops that aren't open source desktops?
So who now owns openoffice.org website?
That's Apache.
Apache now, yeah.
Oracle signed it all over to Apache. I think Oracle retain something.
Probably.
Like joint copyright of the code or something. But pretty much everything went into Apache.
So how difficult would it be to convince them to just put a forward to...
They're not interested in doing so, is the point.
Because they
could have done exactly that.
Well, the key point as well is that what a lot of people don't know about OpenOffice is that not only did Sun and therefore Oracle invest a lot in it, but also IBM. IBM and Sun came to an agreement, and IBM put a lot of money into development for OpenOffice because that's what powers their Symfony suite. And what was part of this controversy is the fact that IBM want to keep on investing in OpenOffice, I believe. So now you've got this thing where OpenOffice has got a commercial backer, which is IBM. The distributions, the Linux distributions, are behind LibreOffice. And the communities behind LibreOffice. And to me, it seems like this is broken into two areas. One is the how healthy the development is on the Office suite, and then also how well it's known in the marketing. And I think we'd all agree that OpenOffice is a way better brand than LibreOffice right now, which is obvious. But this problem with OpenOffice has been going on for the last couple of years. I remember 2 years ago, I think it was, being on a phone call with Simon Phipps and Michael Meeks, Michael Meeks was the person who really did a lot of this work to make it LibreOffice. And they were trying to slim down the source code and, you know, so they could people could hack on different bits of it and make it more accessible. And it was going nowhere because Sun didn't do anything. So
Sun were a company who were very big on management and process and not so big on code.
And, well, and the thing
I thought they put quite a lot of code into it.
They
Office.
Did, but part of the problem was that the Sun acquired Star Division, who originally made Star Office, that then became Open Office. So they had this office in, I think it was Munich, where everybody knows it inside out, and it's very difficult for new people to come on board and hack on it. In the same way that it happened with Netscape Communicator. And then eventually Firefox came out of the ashes of Netscape Communicator, and they slimmed some of it down and they improved some bits of it. And I think that's the thing, is that, that for so long, the reason why OpenOffice went nowhere is because it was too hard to hack on. I mean, it takes 2 days to build it. I mean, and but now what they're doing is, it seems to me, from what I've seen already, that with LibreOffice, it seems way more community friendly. You know, it seems like a lot of people hacking on different things. We've already seen lots of things changing, so I think it's good.
One of the things that is difference between LibreOffice and OpenOffice, which is kind of an important thing, is that LibreOffice is LGPL, if I remember rightly.
Yeah.
But just basically, that's what they could get. They get the source code under that license, and so that's what they started off with. And of course, Apache demand everything is under the Apache public license, which is BSD based, I think, but essentially different and incompatible.
Yeah.
So you can't merge the two projects, cannot merge back. Because any changes that have been made to LibreOffice cannot be relicensed, or without the agreement of the developers, and the developers don't want to.
My hope is that they slim it down. I mean, Ak and I were talking about this at lunch.
You want them to do a Firefox.
Yeah.
Do what Firefox
make it really modular, slim it down.
I think some of that work's happening already. I saw a post from, is it Meeks, Michael Meeks, about probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, and they'd done some work that had trimmed out something like 150 redundant icons, which is a trivial example. But
all the performance stuff.
Yeah. But they'd also trimmed down the source code tree from something like 75 gig down to 11.
Yeah.
Because there's so much bullshit in there, that code that's never used. Wow. They were doing that kind of thing.
That's huge.
Code that's been compiled in but is never executed. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it'd be brilliant if they, because I mean, I know that Firefox is not the same as Netscape Communicator, but
I like that analogy though, because I mean, Netscape used to have the mindshare, and then all of a sudden they were just gone, and
and they open sourced it, but no one could work in it because it was so big.
But yeah, that was the problem with that is the, you know, in the Netscape thing, Netscape had what 30% of the market or whatever when they open sourced it, and by the time they got around to releasing Firefox 0.8 or whatever, that was a bit ropey, but kind of worked. They'd gone down to like 1% market share. It took 2 years, and they didn't release anything in 2 years.
Yeah.
And if you have the same problem with OpenOffice, you could have basically an office suite that stagnates for years, while people are doing stuff in the background. But as a user, I'm seeing nothing.
To a first approximation on the world stage, OpenOffice has no users anyway. It's not like they have 50% of the office suite market. They've got 0% of the office suite market.
That's not true. It's huge in Germany. Open office.
It's big in it's big in corporate rollouts. Like a lot of
box.
It's true. Is
absolutely. So Open Office produce an MSI, a Windows MSI that can be deployed by group
I absolutely believe that they do so. I mean, one of the interesting sub questions I have is that the LibreOffice community seem to be very Linux desktop focused. And is that going to harm its use on Windows? But maybe they're just going to say, well, that's OpenOffice and IBM. We don't give shit about that stuff. We're basically building it for Linux, which they may do. But when you say, it's huge in corporate deployments, what you mean is you could put all the names of all the companies who've deployed it on one piece of paper.
No, what I mean is that it's huge.
Microsoft Office is huge in corporate deployments because everybody uses it.
No, I mean, it's not. I mean, it doesn't take a fucking genius to realise that it's not as big as Microsoft Office, but what I'm saying
it's not as big as Netscape was. Netscape had at least 50% of the market at that point. OpenOffice, there is not one in two computers in the world.
We had exactly the same conversations, 5 years ago, about Firefox. Right, everyone's using IE. Oh, no one uses Firefox. It's only, you know, Linux people use Firefox.
Yeah.
Who's to say this couldn't happen with LibreOffice?
It would be nice to see them get up to 25% of the world.
I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic.
Why?
I don't know.
That's not me taking the piss. That's a serious question.
I think the LibreOffice process is more promising.
What has OpenOffice done in the past? I mean, some of the people
it seems
working
to just
on
have
it,
way more momentum.
But some of the people working on it now were still working on it 2 years ago. And I've heard a lot of talk which says, you know, Sun just prevented us from doing stuff and we didn't want to fork and everything. But what did Sun do that that meant that you couldn't do anything at all to make it any better than Office 95, which is what it is. You know, it's like Word 6.
You know what is a good, I think a good analogy here is that OpenOffice to me was like X386. It was really hard for anyone to improve X386. You had to go through this member resolution process. It was so close.
And so they made X.org.
And then they forked it and they made X.org. And look at that now. They've made tons of changes. It's way faster. There's a lot more innovation in there. That's the reason why I'm confident as well. I mean, because I think...
But then surely the problem is though you've got... In that case, you had one fork in both the Netscape and the X.org ones. You have one fork that was obviously dead, basically. And then somebody forks it off and says, hey, I'm going to actually take this and do something with it. And they get the momentum. Yeah. Whereas in the OpenOffice sense, you have two forks that both think they have the momentum. Apache have IBM backing. They have the name.
OpenOffice think they have momentum.
Well, they have all the marketing behind them. They have the name. They have the Apache name, which is kind of a well-known name, at least in
the corporate world. They have companies who have a budget for... Yeah. Making their products popular. I mean, IBM sell Symfony.
But LibreOffice have the developers.
Well, that's
or a large chunk of the original.
To be fair, of the non-original to be fair, on the side of it maybe not being as successful, as we've all seen, you know, with open source, the majority of the work is done by the companies. You know, Red Hat, Oracle, Canonical, whoever it might be, invest the money in making the software, and so it's a reasonable argument to say because there's a big company behind OpenOffice, it kind of bolsters the chances of that. I think it's where it's going to boil down to a big company that's not necessarily meeting the needs of the community or a community that... Communities have always been nimble on their feet. X386 is still going.
I mean, what's interesting about that? I mean, this is back to the point I was making earlier about the Windows stuff being rather slighted by OpenOffice, so it wouldn't surprise me if it is. That suggests that if IBM... are the primary backers of the thing, they likely concentrate on things which are useful to IBM customers. So corporate deployment stuff, MSIs, having mail merge work, integrating with Microsoft SharePoint, that sort of thing. Yes. You can imagine LibreOffice slighting that kind of work and instead trying to make something with a stripped-down, slick user interface that works really well on a modern Linux distribution like Fedora or Ubuntu. And fuck a bunch of MSIs.
What worries me?
So it is a true fork in the sense that they are different.
What worries me a little bit is not just the Office suites, but also the open document format. I mean, the benefit that we had previously was that OpenOffice and ODF were bedfellows. Now what happens as the ODF format is continued to develop and... like I saw something I think Meeks posted the other day about... how you describe graphics, vector graphics, in the ODF format, and it's a nightmare the way it works right now. And they want to make some improvements to the spec. Now, what happens, it could turn into a pissing match where you get LibreOffice who want to do something for the benefit of LibreOffice, and then, you know, IBM push back on it, or whatever it might be.
Well, it's not even that IBM push back on it. I mean, the reason ODF got adopted by a bunch of standards organisations is because there were people with suits on whose job it was to go to those standards organisations, go slowly through the process,
and to be fair,
sign agreements on behalf of...
And a huge chunk of that was IBM. That
so what's this Document Foundation, then?
The Open Document Foundation. Yeah. I assume that's still tied to OpenOffice, not to LibreOffice.
Right.
No, Open Document Foundation is LibreOffice.
Oh, really?
That's what I thought, yeah.
Who's it being staffed by now, then?
The document the Open Document Foundation is the organisation that manages LibreOffice.
Right, okay, so who's staffing it? To the point where they'll go to ISO and say, okay, let's go through this process.
I think the Open Document Foundation...
Are Novell still behind this?
I think they predated LibreOffice. I think there used to be the Open Document Fellowship, I think it was, and they were so like...
Well, you mean one of them?
Splitters.
I did some work with them for a while. Yeah, and that...
People's Document Foundation.
Exactly.
And I think that they dismantled, and then they became the Open Document Foundation, who look after ODF and all that kind of stuff. And I think LibreOffice was then taken on by them. So I don't think IBM and OpenOffice are as closely aligned in that way. But IBM did much of the work in getting ODF...
Yeah,
to be standard. The very fact that all this
crap is really confusing in itself worries me. I mean, whatever you think of OpenOffice, LibreOffice, whatever, I personally happen to think it's really annoying, and I don't like using it, but I have to because I have no choice. Whatever you think of it, there was at least one of them, and everyone was all pulling in the same direction. Now we shall assuredly all hang separately.
So a few years ago on season two, I believe, I posed the question that were we being complacent in the Linux world? Because in the Windows world, you know, they have viruses, but I was saying that the people in the Windows world, well, I thought at the time that people in the Windows world had their, you know, they'd install their operating system, the first thing they would think of doing is putting antivirus and anti-malware software on. You know, they wouldn't consider running Windows without those things. It'd be like the idea of us connecting to the internet without a firewall. You know, we wouldn't think to do it. But in the Linux world, I said that we never give it a second thought. And we sit back kind of almost smug, thinking, ah, it doesn't affect us, doesn't affect us. But recently, another group of people who used to think that, I believe they were once described as kilt-wearing maniacs by ACK. they are Mac owners.
That sounds far more like a joke comment to me, I have to say.
I think it's orange sunglasses.
Orange sunglasses wearing arseholes.
Yeah. Kilt-wearing maniacs or something like that. Anyway, so Mac owners have recently been falling for these little pop-ups that sort of say, you know, your computer has been infected by a blah, blah, blah. And they've been installing this malware and losing lots of money and things like that. So do you think we're any closer to that now? Are you concerned? No. You don't think it's going to happen to us?
Yes.
Is that blind faith? Or why don't you think it's going to happen to us? If it can happen to somebody on a Mac, why can't it happen to us?
I've been using Linux for 12 years. I've not had a single virus.
It's never happened before.
That's exactly like the old man who says, I've been smoking 40 fags a day. I'm not dead yet.
Yeah, it is. It is blind faith. But frankly,
the reason Jono thinks that is because he's a fucking idiot. Let's be clear.
No, put it this way. If the Ubuntu project felt like it was a risk and it was built into Ubuntu, I wouldn't disable it. But right now, I'm not worried. I haven't seen enough with my friends and colleagues. I don't know anyone who's been affected by a virus in Linux. So it's so small. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but right now...
Didn't it happen when you guys enabled autoplay or something recently? Or not recently, a year or so ago?
A virus?
Yeah. Wow. No? Okay. No. I must be dreaming or something.
Probably heard that from the propaganda machine inside Red Hat.
The point about this stuff is something that Windows antivirus vendors have been saying forever, which is that we don't get targeted because we're not a big enough deal. And since one of the big goals is to become a big enough deal, we are then going to get targeted.
And I think people are now being targeted.
Exactly. Yeah, Mac people were never a big enough deal.
To be clear as well,
they are.
In 2 years when we do our next show, I think I'll answer the question differently, because I think it will be at a point where it will be. I just think where we are today.
You think it will happen, but we don't have to pre-prepare. Right. We have to shut the stable door after the horse has bolted.
Right, no, okay. No. I think that what we do.
No, that's not what I meant. No. Backpedal.
That's what I said. I'm saying that as we get closer to. We will hear more and more people getting compromised on Linux, and at that point, I think.
Wouldn't it be nice to make sure that no one gets owned, rather than wait until a few examples have been owned and then fix it?
No, because...
Can't we preemptively fix it so no one gets owned ever?
No,
wouldn't that be nice?
You can do, but I think that the risk is so tiny today that I think it would be...
Because you think we have more savvy users at the moment, and it wasn't until the Mac started getting less savvy users or more regular people using it that they started falling for this pop-up that sort of says, your Mac is...
It's a combination of that.
Surely the case. At present, your average Linux user is significantly more clueful than your average Windows user.
Agreed.
But
certain distributions are targeting less clueful users.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So are you not concerned?
No, I mean, like I say, I think it's all...
Jono seems not to be.
Not yet.
As I've said...
How hard would it be to just... does the solution to this already exist? If we just basically turned on Clamav for everybody by default, would that potentially solve the problem, or does it require...
No, it's not going to stop Windows popping up, is it?
No one has ever been able to solve Windows popping up.
But how does it stop it? What I don't know is that sort of thing stopped by Norton antivirus, for example, on Windows? Are Windows people still vulnerable to exactly this kind of attack? Or has this problem been solved on Windows? And if so, does the software that solved it on Windows solve it on Linux as well?
Good question, to which I don't know the answer.
Right, okay.
I think the key thing in my mind is that with anything, you assess the level of threat at any one time. And I think that when you start thinking that there is going to be... that there is going to be a risk, you definitely want to get in there and have a solution. And it strikes me that... You know,
it's a black swan, isn't it?
Let's be honest. I just think that, to me, it would be like... The analogy would be... in some ways, the analogy is like the terrorism thing. Like, the risk of terrorism... After 2000, in 2001, was seen to be much higher, particularly in the US. and therefore it kicked in a ton of extra processes and stuff like that. Some people think that it's been a bit heavyweight, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't care about the problem. I'm just saying that
a bit heavyweight.
Carry on.
Well, it depends which bit you're talking about. Like, walking through a scanner at an airport is one thing. Getting a machine, making a machine scan you naked is a different thing. You know, taking little bottles of stuff on the plane.
We're not going to have a fight about the anti-terrorism.
Bringing us back onto the point a bit.
My point is that I don't think that just because there is the possibility that someone can be owned with a virus, that means that we have to build all of this stuff. I think we look at the level of threat and then we react. Today, I don't believe, given the fact that I don't know anyone, speaking personally, I don't know anybody who has ever had this happen to them.
So 12 months ago, it never happened on a Mac.
You're drawing the distinction between a threat and a potential threat. Which is a perfectly legitimate distinction to draw. Do you think that, given that now some people have suffered this problem on a Mac, should Apple have done something preemptively, or were they
what
to
wait to do? What do you want them to do preemptively? This is what I'm not sure. Security is a good thing, yes. Well, security flaws, but you can't write an antivirus scanner that stands for a virus that doesn't exist.
First of all, that's exactly what antivirus people do. They use heuristics to try and detect what's going on.
Because there are no Linux viruses, how do you write heuristics?
But the second point is there are things other than antivirus you can do. For instance, you could sandbox every program.
Right.
So even if it gets infected by a virus, that virus can't do anything because it can't read and write any of your files, it can't connect to the network without permission.
If there was some kind of insecurity enhanced Linux that we can run.
Well, exactly. There's a bunch of research and work going into doing that. I know Fedora, Red Hat have done quite a lot of work on things like SE Linux. There's AppArmor. There are people working on individually sandboxing applications. Well, yeah, exactly. You know, although most of their work, not available to us.
It's open source.
No. The bit they've decided to open source is available to us. I'm quite sure there's a bunch of other internal NSA work about hardening programs, which is not on fucking SourceForge or GitHub or wherever it is, right? But yeah, I mean, so there is a bunch of work going into this. A lot of the work is quite academic at the moment. I mean, the only thing I ever hear about SE Linux from desktop users rather than server users is how to turn it off, like Pulse Audio used to be.
I actually think there's also risks that are not virus-based that we face in Linux that we haven't solved. So a good example is one of the problems that we face in the Ubuntu forums is, you know, someone will go and ask a question about something, and or somebody will ask if a certain piece of software is available for the latest version of Ubuntu, and then somebody will attach a deb that they built to a forums post, and some people have installed these debs and they've hosed their systems.
At which point, epic fail.
Now, that's not a virus, but that includes some of the risks.
That's actually
interesting. Is it malware? If I say to you, go to your machine and type sudo rm-rf/, is that malware?
Yes,
but by a pretty stretched definition of the term,
anything, am I? So it's not anything.
If you give somebody a deb and say install it'll do something nice, and it does something.
What?
I give you a script which does that. Is it malware? I mean, almost the definition of malware is stuff that does something secretive, right?
It does something malicious. That's what malware is. If you say to Aid, type in rm-rf, you know it's going to fuck his system. That's malicious.
That's why it's called malware, not secretware.
But somebody making a deb, somebody making a deb because they think it will genuinely solve somebody's problem, and then they don't realise because they're maybe not as technically proficient at packaging.
Your problem is not people posting debs to the forums which deliberately screw people's systems. It's people who built a deb incorrectly, which uninstalls your graphics driver by accident.
And then that
something.
Gets back to the sandbox. And I think we're going to start seeing more of that we need to solve that will be the precursor to the virus thing. Because we've been seeing this with installing applications. We've got this thing in Ubuntu called Extras where you can install applications outside the repository.
I think I read all about them.
And nice. And you know, one of the things that we have is we don't have a sandboxed environment, so we have a process which is a bit more heavyweight to make sure that these things are properly checked. It's not like Android where everything is much more sandboxed. I think we'll have to face the same thing with Linux.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference between, say, iOS and Android is the iOS stuff is all checked by hand to make sure that an application doesn't do anything malicious. Android gets around the fact that they don't have an army of people to check this, or they don't want that.
Is that
by demanding that your application individually requires all the permissions it wants. So in theory, at least, a user can look at that and say, I don't want it to send emails or make phone calls.
Is that then the problem? When you talk about something we can do beforehand, is that basically, because Linux users in general do go onto the internet and they download stuff, because, you know, we're taught to do that. That's how you get any software, is you do yum install or whatever the dev equivalent is. We're just so used to downloading stuff on the internet, not really worrying about it. Maybe we should we therefore will be training people to actually be a little bit more cautious about what they, you know, only download something that's signed or only download something that you trust.
Well, I'd say that
rather than downloading random devs off a forum.
Well, I'd say that we should be doing that with, you know, you download it from the Red Hat archive or the Ubuntu archive or the Debian archive.
Stuff that appears in Ubuntu Software Center is trustable.
Like, I don't know about you guys, but for me, installing a deb outside of the archive feels weird.
Yeah, I don't like doing it. I very, it very much weird. Dislike installing.
But that's us, you know, we wouldn't but do that.
I dislike doing it, but I do actually do it.
That's a good point. Yeah. And that's where I think we'll see the first wave of malicious software is when people start making these devs. Like, the Ubuntu forums is not much of a risk because it's still people like us.
Yeah. Whereas, and there are Android viruses, for example. And there are no iOS viruses, but that's because everything is individually checked by people. There are Android viruses. It means that you have to say, you have to grant them permission, but A, you might be an exception here, but as a fairly technical group of people, how often do you read through the list of stuff a program wants and then say, no, I'm not going to allow it, just on account of that?
I
do, and
I always wish that you could untick those things. So you can say, well,
so I want the program, but I don't want it to make phone calls.
I don't want it to be able to make phone calls, yeah.
You see, my problem with doing that is that every game you'd install only needs to access the internet, so the ads work, which means you just untick that, and then the game manufacturers don't make any money, and then they stop making games.
Yeah, the problem with the Android thing is it's like a click-through EULA or an installer. Yes. You just keep clicking the button until it goes
away.
It's
much smaller.
No, but what I mean is that I think to Axe Point, to a regular user, they're like, I want Angry Birds to work. Yes.
If Angry Birds needs this stuff, then it can have this stuff, fine, no problem.
Do you remember the Lug Radio app that you wrote? When I installed it on my phone, it says, I need everything. I need to do everything on your phone. I need to be able to read this. And I spoke to you, and I'm like, why does that application need to do all these things, Ack? And your answer was?
That I had worked out how to turn them off.
But it doesn't, and you hadn't worked out how to turn them off.
But you'll notice I wasn't distributing it to the public. I was distributing it to you to test it. One of the
embodiment of Lug Radio in the app itself.
One of the important pieces of feedback I got is that I had to learn how to turn all that crap off, which you were quite right, and that was useful feedback. Yeah.
I do remember at least
also,
one other person gave you
a dick, by the way.
Jerv gave you a kitchen for that as well, so he obviously managed to get a copy of it.
Oh, well, because in the end, I went, yeah, well, here's the app, whatever. I didn't have time to work on it.
So what do we think? I mean,
don't download anything from Mac. That's what we're saying.
All viruses come from me. Don't worry about it.
So let's spin around and see what we think. I think that we need to keep an eye on the problem. And at some point, before it becomes too big of a problem, we're going to probably need to build something into Linux distributions. What do you think, Ed?
So you want to be reactive?
Yes.
It looks like he wants to be proactive.
I would like to be more proactive than we are. Probably not as proactive as you think we ought to be. But at the moment, a lot of the research and work that's going into sandboxing applications, protecting ourselves against this stuff,
is
very, very theoretical and academic. I would like somebody to step up and do this properly, whether that's Red Hat or Canonical or Novell or a committed group of people building an open source thing and then working with the distributions to make it happen or whatever.
Do you guys like ship SE Linux or AppArmor? I'm still AppArmor,
I believe.
Okay. Do you actually use SE Linux, Aid?
Oh yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Right, okay, Aid, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we should be proactive, definitely.
Probably the most proactive out of all of us, okay?
There's not much you can do proactively in technical terms. SE Linux is a kind of a start, but it's all in the education of people saying don't run stupid, you know, don't run stuff from downloading from the internet. Don't run RM-RH, you know.
Well, I think educating people is going to fail miserably.
Yes, I agree with that.
I have more faith in humanity than you.
It's not humanity rough, so much. Okay.
Given the fact that he's just drunk four cartons of devil's shit, I mean, I'm surprised you've got more faith than him.
It's not faith, it's that people don't want to learn because they're not interested. Why the fuck should they have to learn about computers? Want to type a letter. Why do they have to learn about what SE Linux is?
This stuff is going to have to be built into the operating system. Yes. At this point, I'm not particularly concerned. I see no immediate threat, but I guess in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to see it growing.
5 to 10?
Yeah.
You don't see us taking on the new users that quickly then?
No. I don't think it's going to happen quickly.
It's the year of the desktop.
I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen in 2 years' time, or even three. The problem is, you've got to
maybe
be
four.
Have you thought about joining the Canonical marketing department? It sounds like they're missing an important voice. I don't think it's going to happen, dude. It's all fucked.
It's just going to carry on growing. not, I don't think it's just going to go bang and there we are. Anyway, okay. Back at the point.
But that's exactly what happened on the Mac. One minute there was nothing.
Yeah,
last minute,
they were selling cool devices to people that like cool devices. Yeah. Anyway, the problem is you've got to know how to solve the problem in the first place, and Windows people never really figured it out. They know how to minimise the risk, but there's no silver bullet. SE Linux could do the job, but it's really fucking hard.
It isn't.
To you, you did a fucking course in it.
You're a certified Red Hat trainer, right? It's not the normal use case, dude.
If it's not that hard.
Look, how hard is SPSS? Considerably easier to someone doing a PhD than the rest of us.
And there it is. So, I mean, you've got to work out how you're going to solve the problem in the first place, because Windows people haven't figured it out. I remember laughing at the
radio. But with Linux, it's not up to people to work it out. It's up to the distro producer to write the right policy so they don't have to care. They don't even know it's there.
That's exactly the point I was trying to make, which is you can't leave it to the people because it's too hard for average people.
But doesn't the distro manufacturers writing the policy rely on them inspecting every application?
That is the problem.
But are you proposing to do what iOS have done? Have someone at Red Hat or wherever approve every application?
No, you can have a default. Yeah.
Well, isn't the default going to be lock everything down so applications don't work? You can't write any data to anywhere. You can't connect to the network. So how will you solve that problem then? When I install my application which wants to connect to the network, am I going to have to tick a thing like on Android? Do we think that's the Android approach is a good approach?
I like the Android approach.
To be fair, Red Hat and Debian and Ubuntu already do that manual human check-in process. That's what the archive is.
Yeah.
Everything that goes into there is checked by core developers. And that's the reason why I think that we haven't had as much of a problem. And part of it is the fact that we're too small.
But bear in mind that people post debs on the forums because getting them into the archives are a pain in the arse.
No, but
it's a lot easier to say, people, look, just here's a deb on the forum or on my website. I mean, Skype don't put things in the archive, their data isn't checked. What do we do about closed source software?
I agree that we're going to face this more and more, but I think part of what we need to do is, and this is what we're trying to do with Ubuntu, with the extras thing, is to try and simplify
funnier the first time.
it's to simplify how you can get the software in there. Like, yeah, right now, I think it's safe to say that with Debian, with Ubuntu, and with Red Hat, you have to invest a lot of your time and effort to become a developer to get involved in any of the distributions. And I think that one thing that we can probably all learn from is how we simplify that process, but in a way that doesn't sell the farm. Like, the Android thing to me is interesting, but relying on users to approve access to different parts of the phone doesn't make sense.
That's what worries me, that real people, and I include myself in this, just go, well, I want this app, so yeah, okay,
don't
fine.
Care.
I mean, there are a few things. If I'm installing a game and it says, wants to be able to send premium SMSs, I'll think, no, bugger off, how about I don't install this? But it's just like, it wants access to the internet and it wants access to my contacts. That's quite, you know, if it's doing something like that, that's quite useful. But
why does the game need access to your contacts?
No, I'm not talking about a game here, but an application which does something like that, I can't stop it then taking all my contacts and emailing it to the developer because the permissions aren't fine-grained enough. And it's already annoying to have to say, I want this and this and this and this and this.
Yep.
If you make it more fine-grained, it's even more annoying and makes people even more likely to say, fuck it, whatever.
So, it's the end of the show, in fact, the end of the season, but anyway, it's time for the emails.
We don't have any fucking emails. We don't have any emails.
Yeah, why didn't people email us this season?
It's been a good season, though, hasn't it?
It has. What's your favourite bit?
Without a doubt, Adam drinking the filth.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
No, I actually think my favourite bit of the whole season has been the discussion about antiviruses.
Ah, okay.
That was really interesting.
That was a very in-depth discussion.
All the way back in episode one. I thought that was really good.
God, it's such a long time ago.
It's a long time ago, yeah.
It has, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, maybe we should redo that drinking thing again, because it's been a while.
Let's do that more.
I'm sure we could rustle so much. We've still got some of the ingredients.
Yeah, I fucking bet you could, couldn't you?
So we have to say it's going to be a while until the next season.
We're taking a summer break.
Yeah, until like 2017.
We need time to recover and recuperate from the hard season.
Especially Tony and Laura, they need a lot of time to recuperate.
We should say thank you very much to Tony and Laura for doing all the actual work to make this possible. We should be clear, we're not starting again. Right?
Yes. No, we're not.
Well, maybe.
And
we're not starting again.
You say that.
We're not starting again. We're not doing it. We went through this with Bloody Lug Radio Live, and it took a year to convince everybody that we weren't doing it again. But we're not doing it again.
So you know, thanks again to Tony and Laura for, you know, we're in a very small hotel room in central Birmingham, and we just said we want to do a show, and they came up.
Well, that's not strictly true. We said we want to go drinking. Do you want to come with us? And then we said, oh, while you're coming anyway, bring a shitload of mics and stuff.
Yeah, and they set everything up, and, you know, we're getting them a hotel room, and that's all they wanted, right?
Oh, will you stop? So, yeah. The look I've just got from Tony suggests that he's looking for something more, specifically from Aid, than he's actually going to get.
And we should also plug Odd Camp, right?
We should. Actually, yes.
Yes.
Since otherwise this might not get edited at all.
What is it, 13th and 14th of August?
I'll be there. Chris, you'll be there?
I'll be there, yep.
I'll be there.
Adam will be there.
I'll be in San Francisco, so I won't be there.
I'll be at home in America, so I will not be there.
I would like to have come, but yes, very much like to.
13th, 14th of August in Farnham.
Oddcamp.org, is it?
Oddcamp.org. And there's still tickets available, I believe.
How many tickets are there available?
About 30.
30 or so tickets. And people, are the tickets free? Are free tickets?
Yes.
The one and only time I've been to an Odd Camp, it was rocking. So everybody should go. It's a great event.
I've been to them all and they've all been rocking.
Well, don't let the fact that Chris is there dissuade you from going. Can we edit that bit out? So that's it. Let's go.
Thank you very much. It's been, just to be clear, we're not doing this again.
It's been emotional. We
happen to be around for beer, so you might hear the next episode again in 2018 or something like that.
So, yes. Okay.
But good. For now, it's the end of the show. It's the end of the series. Thank you very much.
Hear me now.
And goodbye.
Goodbye.